Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I'm Kyle, and today we've got Victorio Stefanov of Trade Pro Academy on the mic with us today. What is up, Vico?
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me on again. It's been every like few months, every quarter, not even every quarter, every like few quarters.
It seems that we try to get at least two a year in, I think, is what we've been doing.
Yeah, I feel like that's more accurate than my perception of what's going on.
Yeah, usually one at the beginning of the year when you do something like really cool, like some kind of workshop, and then we catch up with you at the end of the year.
Pretty much, yeah. I think that's how that goes. Like, right? We've got like a month left until the year ends.
Well, I got to get my my market outlook 2025 from you, because every year you've done that for us has been like spot on.
Yeah. This I thought this year, honestly, we'd have a little more turbulence at like Q1, but
yeah,
I don't know. My target was 6,000 at the end of the year, around there. Like, I have no complaints, honestly, right, on the S&P.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Dude, so how's Europe, man? You're back in Canada, right?
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So I came back for one of my good friends was getting married, so I came back for a wedding and then see my parents. I hadn't seen my family and like, well, my parents, I guess, in about a year, but been in Europe for, I guess, 2 years now. It's been over 2 years since I've officially moved, and I haven't really gone back and forth. Like, I did a recent like little chat podcast. Oh, yeah? Yeah, about traveling and trading, actually, and had a few questions about that. But like,
what was that on?
Like, in terms of
what platform was it? Was it?
Oh, you'll see.
Are you bringing it back?
Yeah. So yeah, maybe whoever listens to this might get a little hint of that. But
oh, dude, I'm excited. Yeah, George was hinting at something. I thought that might be what it was, but he never actually told us. He came over, watched the Tyson fight with us last. Was that?
Week or two ago? He was telling me, like, I saw him because he's in Toronto too. Like, he was in Toronto. I met up with Fatty as well from Trade Pro yesterday. We hung out, had a little chat.
Dude, Fatty was awesome. We had him on not too long ago too.
Yeah. It's good. I like doing videos or content with Fatty because you can just like talk. Like, you don't have to like lead or anything. You have like two topics and he just like goes off, which is like great. Right. Sometimes like you need like some time to think of things and he just goes.
Yeah, that's kind of like what I got Baba. Whenever I bring Baba on, I can just tee him up on a topic and then I got half an hour to think of something else. So you aren't back in Canada for good then, right?
No, absolutely not. I've been in Europe for 2 years now, and I come back like probably like once a year, like for a month, let's say, see my family, see some friends, and then go back. I've like one of the biggest things I would say this year was my kind of shift towards trading more so the European session.
Oh, I was going to actually ask you about that because, trading in Europe, like RTH happens at what time for you? It's like 4 o'clock?
Depending on where I am, like 3 or 4 p.m. like is about 9 a.m. Eastern time.
Yeah.
So like 3:30 p.m., 4:30 p.m. is like where the market opens, like depending on where I'm at. But usually those two time zones, like I don't really go to the UK. Mm-hmm. So
you're trading more like this, the Euro overnight sessions.
Yeah, I find it honestly very chill and like calming.
Yeah.
It's more towards my like trade style because I know that Baba, you're probably kind of similar to Baba where it's like more of a tighter, smaller like scalp to begin with and then kind of see where it unfolds.
I think your style more aligns with my style.
Okay. I wasn't 100% sure. Last time we talked, I felt like it was in the middle somewhere between both of ours because I know Baba was like hitting like an 8-point stop on NASDAQ and I'm like, dude, whoa.
Right. Like I've actually gone away from NASDAQ for a little bit, actually just focusing back on ES again.
Yeah, NASDAQ like has it gone a little too funky?
Well, it's not just that, but it's like after the FTT collapse, I don't know if you trade props at all, but
A bit. I just like I don't really trade them that much. I feel like that's something that we can talk about. Like it's kind of like a reserve thing on the side, but like I do know a lot of people that were like, oh, like what is it, FTT, they yeah. just like rug pulled everyone. I'm like, yes. I need a little more intel.
I mean, that was pretty much it. And then if you were in the Discord where they were leaking everything, then you probably got banned for a day for joining that too.
Oh no, I wasn't. I didn't. Yeah, my Discord was like flying high. Like again, like some of my friends, they were like, hey, listen, like I can't. Like texting me, he's like, I can't go on Discord for like a day or two. And I'm like, what the hell happened? And
then, I tried appealing that shit too. They were not.
They didn't care.
Nope. Nope, they did not give a shit.
I don't really know what happened to that, but why did that kind of deter you from NASDAQ for a bit? Like, what's the
correlation? So it's kind of a convoluted path that we'll have to get through to get to it. But so basically, I was trying to trade with prop firms as a way of like managing risk, right?
Yeah.
Especially with FTT. FTT was awesome because it was a one-time fee. You didn't have to pay the monthly renewal, so you can just kind of sit and grind away at a prop account the same way you would do a live account.
Yeah.
Well, I got within like maybe a day and a half of targets worth of hitting a goal for getting the payout on that thing.
You were like a day away, you mean?
Yeah, basically. Okay. A day and a half, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, sure, yeah.
And then they rug pulled the whole thing.
Oh, God.
And I mean, I didn't lose much. I mean, obviously. I was just working one little account, but yeah. You know, I talked to a couple other guys that were, you know, stuck for multiple five-figure losses that they'll never get out of that thing.
Yeah, I've heard of similar cases.
And then you look at some of the other, I can't remember who sent it to me. Someone sent me some screenshots of some big crypto things that were happening at the same time that they're able to match their accounts and show that like $13 million that just got split up between all the founders.
I did see that actually. Yeah. I saw like the main things that I saw about that, because again, I'm not like super deep into that space. I don't really know too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing that I saw is like, all of the, I guess, like executives or whatever they want to call themselves, like the founders or like main, like the top people from FTT, like the guys who like started it.
Yeah.
I just saw like the internal conversations that they were having with one another. And it was like, it was disgusting. I was like, oh my God, like whoever, I don't remember any of the names, but like there were a few traders that were doing really well. And they're like, no, this can't be real. Like we're never going to pay these people out. Like this has to be like some kind of BS. So it's like the fact that they were actively looking for excuses, mm-hmm. just like not pay people out. Like I know someone who was waiting for like months and they were pushing to pay affiliates out without paying profits out so those affiliates could continue to push their product. Yep. Like that's like I guess the bulk of what I know about this. And like from my understanding, they did have the capital to pay the majority of those payouts out.
Kind of looked like it, didn't it?
Because it was like what? It was 15-ish million, right? Like that's a lot of money. Right. Like there, I don't think any of the accounts that were like quote unquote leaked had a cumulative total above that, at least.
We might be able to go look through and total that up, or at least see the ones that they were like specifically flagging as like, we're not paying this guy.
Yeah, the ones that they were specifically saying no to, I know that mm-hmm. like they could have paid out at least a majority of that.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so that whole thing happened, and then I just kind of got burned out of the whole prop space in general.
Yeah,
decided to start trading a live account again. Yeah. But here's the thing, and you trade a $4,000 account, and you want to keep your risk within, you know, 1.5% or so per trade. Yeah. It doesn't let you do much with, you know, more than maybe like one micro on an NQ the way I like to trade, which is, you know, at least a 10-point stop.
Like I do agree with you 100%. Like I think like that's one of the I guess barriers on NASDAQ specifically, like you mm-hmm. like, yeah, I guess like the dollar denomination per point is smaller, but like if you want like a real chance, in my opinion, on NASDAQ, you're gonna have to fork over larger stops on like the S&P. So like you're risking more. And I have this conversation a lot between what's the difference between like, let's say trading a smaller account versus like prop accounts. Like number one, like I would probably stick to the prop accounts that like are the most reputable, you know, the ones that haven't had mm-hmm. like that have like a longer history of
payouts.
Actually, yeah. Like doing good by like their traders and not like screwing people over.
And Apex is not the example to look toward.
Yeah. Like I would say Apex is like mid tier, you know, like I'm not saying it's like the top, but like, I'm not saying that it's like complete garbage either. They have their moments. I don't know that much either. Like I've traded Apex a bit, not much. Like I've had payouts, I've had denials, but like nothing crazy on either end.
Mm-hmm.
It's been like, okay, I'll trade prop maybe 20% of the time, but I mainly trade like two different accounts, like a day trading account and a swing trading account for futures.
Yeah.
But I will do props as well because it's a way to diversify a little, I find.
Well, plus it's just the leverage that you get for such a small outlay of capital.
Like, it is. Yeah.
If you have edge in those in their environment where they are stacking the deck against you. Like, hats off then.
Yeah, there's a lot of rules realistically. And like, I think one of the big things that people don't understand is like, let's say you take whatever kind of account, 100K or a 50K account, like you have a limited drawdown, right? Whether it's like 3-4K, I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but like, it's all smoke and mirrors because the real account that you have is the 2 or 3K, whatever it is, you know, that's the size of your account.
Yes.
So like, if you're trading size on that kind of account, like you're kind of YOLOing it, you know what I mean?
Right. Man, it's just tough to find one that has, like, I don't know if they exist. I like the guys at Traders Launch. I like what they were saying, but I haven't really followed them too closely to know if they're really, like, you know, sticking with that message. There's another group out there called the Funded Futures Desk, I think, or the Futures Desk.
Dude, there's so many right now. Like, I only know of like the main ones and I don't really like dive into them that much.
The only reason why I know those two is because I've been talking to the owners.
Yeah.
Like, I like what the Futures Desk guys are saying. It's just going to be, I guess, really comes down to whether or not they follow through on what they're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, limiting resets to one per day is kind of that's like a big revenue for most of these prop firms.
It is. Like, that's the thing. Like, there has to be some kind of middle ground realistically, because like, these props are seen as shady, in my opinion, by like a lot of people, right? Like, there's so many of them realistically. So like, they got to kind of protect their necks in terms of their reputation from that regard, but they also have to be able to like pay people out consistently. So like, I feel like they're like props right now, the ones that are coming up and like the ones that are still established, they're kind of trying to find a middle ground between their bottom line as well as like loyalty to traders, because like the industry is very saturated at this point and there has to be some kind of pull that attracts people towards XYZ prop. Like, whether it's like pricing point, I don't think is like that big of a thing right now. I don't think it's like the main deterrent or the main factor that traders look at or like accept or deny prop firms. I think one of the biggest things is the consistency of payouts as well as like the loyalty and like the ability to abide by the rules that they set out for traders and like be consistent with that. So like, again, I think at the end of the day, new ones, old ones, it comes down to like, what's the track record of paying people out on time and like, and like not making up BS excuses. So like, there are a lot in the space. Like, if I go down the rabbit hole, I can probably find like 10 that I might like based on like face value. But at the end of the day, unless you like trial and error and go through it, like you're never going to really know, you know.
Dude, even a company like Top Step, like you you ever watch their Top Step TV, watch them trade their house accounts?
I don't want to say too much about that. Like, I don't know.
No, the only point, hey, I'm not going to make fun of the trading. The only thing I want to say is, where is their incentive at Top Step showing you their traders? It's not to show you good trading to get you.
It is. Like, I agree with you. And like, I didn't, because like, again, like I'll speak factually. I'm not saying like factually an opinion based only on my opinion. No, like no putting down or no bringing up. I'm not affiliated. I'm not trying to like boost anyone or I'm not trying to like bring anyone down. But like, that's what I had thought as well, because why do Top Step TV with a quote unquote house money account? Now it could be real. It could not be real. I don't know. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think it is real, because I think I've watched the Dom change when they like, stick their limits on. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm not hinting at it not being real. It could be very well real, but like the incentive realistically is you get 10,000 people watching you live, right? I don't know how many there are. Let's say a few thousand I think it's between like 4 and 10,000 on average.
They get up to 30 at some days.
Yeah. So on average, let's say like five, at a time, let's say five on average, which is like, it's the incentive is what I think you were alluding to.
Yeah. Right? You watch them the house account and they're just, you know, dollar cost averaging this 100-point, you know, ripper.
Yeah,
like, what are you doing?
It's not like, I don't think that they think that's good trading either.
No, I don't think so either. But I don't think it's their incentive. Their incentive isn't to show you good trading, I don't think.
100% is the complete opposite, in my opinion, at least. Because like, that's what churns the revenue, right?
Yeah. So that's one of the things that got me kind of excited about the Futures Desk, is just because of the fact that if you pass eval with them, you're actually getting like a K-9 or whatever the form is that you got to, you know, fill out for your trading gains and losses, which is more than you'll ever get from the majority of these prop firms.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because normally they're never actually putting you in a live environment. So
yeah. Like, is that only for US traders then?
I don't think so. I think they're more than just US. But it's invite only right now. They're still new. I wouldn't mess around with them too much until they've, like you said, proven a track record.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think it's a huge incentive to have the ability to get, like, I guess, access to funds like this easily in a simulated environment. Like, you know, you can take it both ways, because, like, realistically, in these simulated environments, like, they are pulling volume out of the market, right? Mm-hmm. Because, like, you have thousands and thousands of traders that are now with all of these firms that aren't actually trading real size, right? So it can take volume out of the market. Now, I'm not saying that we're making a huge, like, retail storm of, like, pulling volume out of this market. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, oh, okay, we've just cut the volume in half. But, like, there is differences, realistically. Because imagine all that volume and all that size, all those accounts actually trading in the market.
Oh, good. How many people have 20 accounts with Apex?
Exactly. So, like, imagine they're actually putting that kind of size into the market. Like, it's going to make a difference, realistically.
Yes, yes.
Like, it's not going to be as efficient. I feel like the efficiency of the market over the past year has increased, like drastically.
Oh, you think that might be a symptom of having less retail participating?
I do, actually. And, like, that's
interesting.
I don't think it's, like, a seismic shift in terms of, like, the size of retail that's no longer trading. Mm-hmm. I just think it's more so the fact that there are a lot of new traders that have never entered the market. So the efficiency gradually goes up as time progresses if there's no new, like, participants, really.
Right, if you don't have somebody.
Yeah, if you don't have, like, a patsy, you're not going to, like.
Right. You got to have some fish at the table, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, listen, I'm not, like, it's not a conspiracy or anything, or, like, I don't think it's, like, factual, but, like, I think that there is some kind of indication of that. And, like, it does seem like markets are getting more efficient, especially on a larger scale in terms of, like, big companies, large market caps, the overall market in itself. And they tend to be, like, a little harder to trade. I think, like, a lot of people trading, like, pennies, or not even pennies, but, like, just say small caps and, like, lesser known companies, there's way less efficiency there, but, like, there's way less liquidity. Like, right now, it's just, like, everything's very tight. I think that there could be, like, several factors that have influence over that, right? Typically, mm-hmm. if you have bullish moves, right, in a market, you have a bull market, it's not going to be volatile, right? You're not going to see, like, crazy swings. So, like, that's one.
There's no volume on this move up. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it just continues for another 30% higher.
Yes.
Like, it's, like, that's, like, one of the factors. Like, obviously, when you're in a bullish market, like, the volatility dries up, right? You don't really have too much volatility. But when you do have downswings, the downswings are, like, very, I would say, organized and very quickly bought up.
Yeah.
It just seems like.
And they fail at, like, the spot where you're like, man, if they could just go another 10 more points, this thing is going to flush.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like picture perfect, you know? It's like a little too pristine of, like, oh, wow, they bought the dip right where they were supposed to. Like, yes. What the hell? Like, that's fantastic. But, like, I think from that regard, it seems like these markets, especially in, like, mega caps and, like, the overall market is more efficient in terms of taking in information and, like, accepting that information. Like, the level of uncertainty isn't very high right now. I think, like, a lot of the market is still just running based on earnings and earnings expectation, mm-hmm. where, like, and if it continues to run higher, right, day trading and intraday trading futures, in my opinion, becomes an easier game if you're looking at it from a very big perspective, where, like, scalping, in my opinion, becomes harder.
Yeah, I mean, well, anytime you got the wind at your back, it's a lot easier to trade as long as you're trading in that direction, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You could try to fight this move all the way up, just get, you know, chopped to death, or you could, you know, ride the trend.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like trends, like, intraday, like, whether they're up or down, they seem a little more, I want to say, like, obvious mm-hmm. this year. I haven't, like, obviously, yes, I have been surprised. Like, that's impossible to say that that's not the case. But, like, I feel like more rarely this year than, like, in prior circumstances. I just think, like, the volatility is just super dried up. And there's not really that many participants, especially, like, into the end of the year. Yeah, you have, like, a lot of things to consider. Like, you had the election. You have a new president, you've got the end of the year, right? Like there's a lot of things to consider realistically. You have like inflation while Jerome Powell is cutting rates, you know, like there's a lot of underlying stuff that's not necessarily clear yet. So like, I think the best case, the market's just sitting there, and like a lot of market participants are heavy in cash because they're like, I don't really know. I don't know what to do.
I don't know that anybody wants to be holding a position through Thanksgiving weekend with all the Middle East turmoil that's going on, the things escalating with Russia.
See, those are like, I don't know. I like, again, in my experience, like it's kind of BS market reaction until something very, very drastic happens. And like, the chance of that happening this year, because there's like a month left, you know, right. It's like, I think they're at least going to wait until next year if things like that happen. Like, right. I don't know. That's just like, that's just my opinion. I feel like we're in a position right now where this market, everyone is like euphoric to either end, and is just going to like end up getting dull for a bit and then just continuing higher. Like, I think too many people are trying to call all time highs. Everyone's trying to like sell the shit out of this, and like it'll pull back a bit, like a few percent here and there, rotate for about a month, and then just continue higher.
Yeah, we talked to Eric Mason quite a bit lately. I actually been working on a new podcast with him, going through like the presidential history. Mm-hmm. But one of the things, he was one of the biggest bulls coming into 2024, mm-hmm. that I had known, and anybody who said anything bearish, he said, "Show me one piece of economic data that looks bad. I'll wait."
But he's right. Like, yeah. I don't know who he is, but I totally agree with him. like I think
get you in the mic with him. You'll like him.
Yeah, that'd be great. Actually, like I'd probably learn a lot. Like, I feel like he has a good understanding of these things. And like,
biggest thing to do is buy Boeing after every incident.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like he, I think he's 100% correct, because what happened? When was it? Like whatever escalations we had this year, it's just like, mm-hmm. buy that news. Like,
right.
If you look at the underlying, the only thing that I could have argued for in terms of like fundamentals or like economics, in terms of like it being maybe a little more bearish or maybe being a little more uncertain, let's say, right? Creating volatility slash uncertainty. I wouldn't necessarily just call it a massive bearish event, would have been the fact that Jerome Powell is starting to go into QE and starting to unwind these rates while markets are at all-time highs. That was the only like big factor of concern that I was looking at. I'm like, this isn't necessarily the best time to be doing something like that. As like, when the Fed does that, it becomes like more of a preemptive thing.
Typically when the Fed starts signaling they're cutting rates, isn't that typically a downturn too?
Yeah, see, that's like, it's typically like in the past, it's been a like a preemptive measure before something larger of uncertainty is to come, you know?
Okay.
So like the trigger of those like Fed cuts typically, right, results in maybe a quarter delay of downside, let's say. Mm-hmm. So like after we kind of got through that hump and through that, it doesn't seem like the market like really cares anymore, and it just continued higher. I was like, okay, well, that was the only thing that I was concerned about. I know like people on Twitter and stuff are like talking about the Japanese yen carry trade, like it's like, and like credit events, and like all this shit. I'm like, I'm like, oh my god, get your like your head out of your ass. Like, it's not like there's other factors that are contributing to this like continued bull, and like you're trying to call a black swan, you know, like that's what I call the black swan.
Yeah, right. Yeah. How many times has Michael Burry claimed it?
Michael Burry's called the last 50. He's called the last 15 out of the last two recessions. Like,
yes, exactly.
It's like, you get it head on once, and you think like everything is like this massive risk off event. But like, I'm sorry, who is Eric? Do you say Eric?
Eric Mason. He's Eric the CFO Mason. For Quincy.
Okay, so Eric Mason, he comes on and he's like, show me one bad piece of like economic data. 100% agree. Earnings growth. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like one of the main constituents in like the health and the growth of like the stock market, the economy, right?
Yeah.
You're looking at these things and like, if earnings growth is so juicy, right? And earnings are so nice. I'm not saying they're like the best ever, like they've ever been, but they're good. Mm-hmm. If they're able to sustain those levels while inflation is still like fairly high, then it doesn't seem like there's any massive underlying risk for this year. Like from the beginning of the year, even now, it doesn't seem like there's any underlying risk. unless you get like some kind of cataclysmic black swan event that turns things down. Like going into next year, I'm not like super blindly bullish. Like I was pretty bullish this year, but I wanted to see a little more of a pullback, which we didn't get. You know, like I started my first buying in 2024 was in April, right? When we got a, not even a big pullback. It was like 5%, I think.
Oh, that was a good spot to buy. Yeah.
So and like
they tested you again in July, it looks like, or August.
Yeah, August, like on my birthday, Sunday, August 4th, I bought a lot of things.
Dude, like that day is what ruined my bold prediction for the year that we wouldn't trade below 18,000.
The August. Yeah. Like it was like, I think that was an overreaction. Everyone's like, oh my God, the carry trade's unwinding, blah, blah, blah. Like, shut the hell up. Like it's right. Like buy this dip. Like, don't be an idiot.
Yeah.
Those events and like going into a seasonality, which is typically bearish, but like earnings are coming out like nice, juicy. You're getting like decent growth. Inflation's like pretty freaking high. Let's be honest, right? The real figures are not 2% inflation target. This is a year over year figure. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You know, like over the past like 4 years of inflation's up 20%. Like this little drop doesn't mean shit. You know, like
inflation always goes up.
Yeah. It's like since 2020, if you look at like a cumulative curve of inflation, it's like, it's disgustingly high, you know, and we're at this like peak where it's like barely trickling lower and everyone's like, oh, congratulations. Yeah. Like it's a lot, but like if things are still going well like this on the underlying, like I don't necessarily see a reason to be like super bearish about this. I think like next year, yeah, maybe we could have some like rockiness into the end of like Q1. But like ultimately, I don't think that this thing's done. And I think like whatever recession or fears that people have kind of get pushed back a little. I think like towards 2026, end of 2025, for me, it becomes more of an issue that I might consider.
You know what makes me a little more on guard is not people calling the top. It's when people stop calling the top.
Yeah. I think That is a huge factor as well when people start getting very greedy, right? Like at highs, I don't like that either.
That's actually become a new indicator for myself. When I start feeling extreme greed, that's my key to tighten up my stops or take profit and close the trade.
I think that's a very, very important factor. Like I've trimmed a lot of like longer term positions into these highs and like swings for the year into these highs. But like, I don't know. I'm still under the impression that like it's, we're still in a solid period where I think that we get like people get shaken out like earlier in next year where like everyone's going to be super happy when we get like maybe a 10% drop or something like that.
Right.
And like everyone's going to be like, I fucking knew it. Like here are the tops. Like we've called it. Like everything is good to go. Like start selling everything that you own. And then we start like rotating and pumping back into new highs.
Yeah. And it'll be slow.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know. That's my perception. Obviously I take it step by step. Like I'm not like trying to predict anything, but.
Let me ask you this then. Do the concerns of America issuing a bunch of tariffs on imported goods from Canada, Mexico, and China throw a wrench into any of those plans? Like if those actually go through, does that worry you?
I think realistically the whole tariff conversation, because like, yeah, there are a lot of tariffs, especially like now we saw Canada, Mexico, China's been top of the list, right?
Yeah.
I feel like at that point, I guess like it would stagnate things a little. It's also dependent because I don't know what the import exports are like in the States. Like, I don't know.
Our biggest trading partner now is Mexico. That's overtaken China.
Okay. So Mexico being the biggest one. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's not going to be the best aspect because like prices are going to start to increase.
Especially on automobiles, because a lot of when we started, leaning into that whole NAFTA agreement, a lot of our manufacturing centers ended up moving down there because they can just ship them up.
Okay, so like a lot of things are realistically going to be marked up in the States. So like they're going to get things are going to get a little more expensive in that case. So that's one of the issues that also ties into what the Fed is doing right now, like potentially another inflation cycle, right? So when prices, like even for tariffs, right, they get a little stickier for you guys over there because you're going to be paying a little premium, right? So that plus, right, cheaper money starts to kind of, it doesn't like cancel out. I think that there's more of a perception that there's a higher potential for another inflation cycle, as we saw with what happened throughout the COVID period. Not as extreme, I would imagine, realistically, but like Jerome Powell cutting rates right now and looking to get a little more aggressive with QE, going into next year. And I don't imagine Trump's going to let him off the hook without doing that. You know, like,
not, he didn't last time.
Exactly. So like last time, if anything's an indication, like it's going to, we're probably going to see like fairly low rates. And that doesn't necessarily help what is going on with the tariffs as well. So I think like worst case scenario is another inflationary cycle where you have maybe a year of happiness in terms of market growth, because again, it's bullish realistically, mm-hmm. but you look at it from the underlying, probably unemployment figures, earnings, things like that are going to get a little stickier, where you're going to be in a tougher spot, but it's going to be delayed in that instance.
Yeah.
You know, so it, that's like, yeah, like I would say that is like tariffs plus rate cuts don't necessarily mesh very well, but like just tariffs in general, realistically, if especially if like,
well, he still has to get them approved too, right? I mean,
yeah, like yeah. We're talking like hypotheticals, right? Yeah. Like if that's the case, and like again, that's why I ask, because I'm not like super versed in like what percentage of like goods and like everything is imported, especially from like Mexico. So like if a large component of like GDP is like coming from imports in the US based on like the countries that are trying to get tariff, like it's not bullish.
Right. Well, you mentioned Jerome Powell. I kind of wanted to ask your opinion on this. And how do you feel about the way he navigated this whole, I don't know what you're going to call it, the whole soft landing scenario?
I think bad, personally.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think he should have cut rates to begin with, because now they're kind of pinned. Because their first rate cut was a double cut right away.
Yeah.
Like, no testing the waters, nothing. They're just like, cut it. Like they may as well have cut a full percentage point, like, you know?
Right.
So I think they're navigating it pretty poorly. I think that if they continuously cut rates like this, it's, you don't really have that much powder, right?
Like, because because they're gonna
because you're gonna be at zero before this thing dumps 30%. You know what I mean? Like, it's
right,
and at that point, their powder is starting to pump the bonds up again, right? So mm-hmm. like they go into full QE with like the repurchase program, which like the Fed's balance sheet, I haven't looked at it recently, but it should be over $8 trillion. Like, that's ridiculously high.
Right.
Like the US like deficit is like extremely high. And like, I don't think they can afford to increase their balance sheet, you know? And right. like that becomes their last, I guess, last tool, if you will. Like if rates are like drastically low before getting into something that actually requires some kind of intervention, it's like, okay, do we start just like purchasing bonds again and like creating this extremely vast balance sheet that there's like no unwinding from there, you know? Like,
yeah,
if you unwind that thing, like it really destroys a lot of value. And like the market is extremely overextended. Like, we're trading into standard deviations based on like growth to GDP that are like very, very far away from what the standard is. Like, where we are very high, I understand that, and like a lot of this is artificially held up in terms of valuations. So like, in my opinion, I think that the rate cuts that happened were too aggressive, like right at the beginning. I think that they helped like bullishness continue into this market, but it just doesn't seem like the right time.
If the goal was to not have a recession, I think they've actually navigated at least the first couple of years of that pretty well.
Yeah, I think if the goal is like not to have a soft landing, I think the only thing that they've done is just like push it out further.
Interesting.
Like, I don't think that we like come out of this without, because like look at it this way, like 2022 was a 35% drop in the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that this recession is 50-60%, but like a 35% drop isn't going to, like, you know, it's not going to be end of the world.
No, not really. 30% so, drop takes you to what, like 14K on NQ?
I don't even know, but like, is it 14? Mm.
If we're trading at 21, 30, a third of that would be, what, 700 points? Or 7,000?
Yeah. So like,
that's pretty substantial.
It is bigger, right? But like, that's not over like a week or two.
No, right.
You know, like if you look at 2022, like that was throughout the whole year.
Yeah,
we started 2022 January, and ever since January, we had this slow decline until like October, November, right? So it was like an 11,
yeah,
like
about 30%. Yeah, it was like 6,000 points. Went from like 18.5 down to like 12,000.
This is 2022, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, 22, yep.
Yeah, so like you start the year and there's just a slow gradual decline throughout the entirety of the year, right? Like no one was screaming recession then.
No. Right? Well, we were, but that was it.
Yeah. Like, well, I'm saying like...
Only because they changed the definition.
Yeah, exactly. Like it wasn't something that like, in my opinion, everyone was like super fearful of. You know what I mean?
No, but I think that was the first recession I got to actually like sit through. Or I would call it a recession. But it made me wonder, like, do we just not identify recessions as they're happening? Is that just something that we always look back on and be like, oh yeah, that was a recession?
Well, the way that like I identify a recession is from like the GDP standard.
Yeah.
Right. Like
shrinking for two quarters.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Like that's like the main definition. And like realistically, like bear market versus recession, I think are different things.
Yeah. And that one was a really funny recession by any stretch. Like any other metric you're looking at besides the GDP, I think was showing that we were not in a recession.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, that's why it wasn't like, I don't think it got like that much media attention.
Right.
Because like,
that's probably too why it was so grindy on the downside too.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't anything drastic. There wasn't anything that like quote unquote broke. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
Like there wasn't any black swan of it. You didn't have like subprime mortgage explosions, you know? Like it wasn't yeah. There wasn't anything like that was that cataclysmic. And I think everyone compares whatever we have going forward, like 2022 and whatever we might have in the future to what happened to 2008, 2009, you know? I think like that's what people are conditioned to look at as like a quote unquote recession.
Do you see that one and the what's the other one? I always see people overlaying the Black Tuesday
Black
one.
Monday, yeah. Black Monday 1987. Black, yeah. They're like really? Yeah. The overlays kill me.
No, no. We're right here in the cycle. Yeah. Okay.
But it goes up another 20%. I love when those posts come out because I'm right. Like, I'm buying this shit. But okay. Yeah, like I think pullbacks are healthy and like again black swans are black swans for a reason, right? Yeah. Like people trying to call a black swan every month for the past like 3 years, like you would have done a lot better if you just closed your eyes and bought like everyone else. Like
I know.
Like you know the have you seen like the bell curve meme where it's like the guy that's like low IQ on the left tail and the guy that's like high IQ on the right tail and then like the guy in the middle that's like average. And it's just like the two guys on the right and the left tail, they're both just buying the dip. Like one guy because he's stupid, the other guy because he's smart. And the person in the middle is like, no, I got to wait for the recession.
That's fucking hilarious.
So it's like whether you're right tail or left tail, it doesn't matter. Smart or stupid, do the right thing.
Right.
That is so funny. But like, yeah, I think, I don't know. I think that like when it comes like, down to the topic of like recession, like massive pullbacks, it's one of those things that you know when you're in it type thing,
mm-hmm.
Right? And if it just like keeps grinding lower, like I have some like very basic indicators that just like help me understand what's when it's like extremely oversold, because I'm not like, I don't know, I don't really short too much.
Cumulative tick.
Yeah, like breadth, right? Cumulative yeah. breadth, stuff like that. Like when breadth is really overextended to the downside on like multiple time frames, like 200 days, like 20 day, like averages, stuff like that. Like when all of them are super overextended, then I know, okay, you're probably like bottoming out. You know what I mean? So it's like they're very, very basic things that like even like fund managers use to a different degree, but it keeps you, I guess, like on side of like not constantly trying to catch like a knife just in case.
It gives you a repeatable thing to look for.
Yeah, exactly. And like I've back tested it since like the beginning of like the SPY and the triple Qs, and like every time there's a major bottom, there's like they get extremely oversold. And you just wait until they get not oversold when they start grinding back up, which like typically indicates a bottom between like 5 and like 7%, which is like fair, you know? Mm-hmm. Like you're not catching the absolute bottom. Even if I'm 10% off the lows, like I don't care. You know what I mean? Like,
no, because you're paying that. That's the premium you pay for more confirmation.
Yeah, exactly. So like, I'm not one of these like doom and gloomers. Like I do like the upside. I'm bullish. Like I'm more bullish than bearish for most cases, because like, if you think of how the SPY is like engineered, the SPY is engineered to reconstitute the.
Yeah. You take the shitty ones out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like, where do you think it's going to go in the next 10 years? Probably up.
Yeah. That's why people would point to this S&P as like a reason to buy stocks. Like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah,
S&P exactly. Goes up, but that doesn't, it's not the same stocks every year.
Exactly. Like there are big major names that you can kind of lean on, but even they're not always safe, you know, like,
yeah.
You have years that some big names don't do very well and some years that do fantastic. So I don't know. Like I said, I'm not like doom and gloom. Like I think that there is uncertainty for sure, but I think until everyone gets a little more confirmation in terms of the Fed, in terms of what Trump's going to do, I think it's going to be a very uncertain 2025 to begin.
Do you think Powell gets replaced?
No.
He has to step down, right? He can't be forced out.
I don't know the exact rules, but I know that he said he's not leaving.
I know he wants the legacy. He wants the legacy of being the person who negotiated COVID.
Yeah, like I think he's gone through so much shit, that guy, that he like he wants to just like end out on like a very good note.
Yeah. Be the guy, you know, who like, beat, you know.
Yeah, he wants to go through. Yeah, exactly. He wants to go through all the shit. Like whatever, he's already gone through so much shit. He's just like, give me anything at this point. Like, in his last press conference, they asked him, they're like, would you consider stepping down? He's like, nope, just one word, nope.
See, I'm still of the impression that when he does finally get replaced, it's going to be Jamie Dimon.
Oh God, I don't think that'd be good.
I don't know. Well, did you know what the benefit to him though is? If he takes that position, he can liquidate his JPM holdings without paying taxes.
No way.
Yeah.
How many millions of dollars is that?
I think you probably need to add some zeros to that.
you think it's over a billion?
I don't know.
Well, I don't know how much he has, but like I know his total compensation, like I think, is around $50 million annually. So I don't know what kind of options and stocks that's included.
$2.6 billion net worth.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And it's all largely because of his stake in JP Morgan. Yeah. So there's a huge incentive to.
Yeah, I'd assume it's the majority of that. Yeah, that's a lot. Okay, that's way more than I imagined. But
plus, you see him in the news all the time. It seems like he just enjoys getting involved in that stuff.
He does. Yeah. I don't like. I think he's a pretty intelligent man, honestly. But I don't think that necessarily translates to being able to be a
being good at monetary policy. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
no.
Yeah. I think he's really smart and he's like good at what he does. I think he was like a very good banker, like before JP Morgan, but I don't necessarily think that's what we need. And I say we, because like I trade the US market. Not that I'm
right. Well, speaking of things that we need, then, so we're getting kind of close to the point where you can start wrapping this up, but TradePro Academy, you said you got some sort of specials going on?
Oh, yeah. So, like, for Black Friday, we're doing, like, 60% off for the first month. I think it's, like, $88 for the first month. And I'm doing a kind of, like, mentorship
program. Oh, you're opening that up again?
Yeah, like, it's a small portion of, like, what I do. Like, generally, I'll work with, like, people one-on-one throughout the year, right? Like,
yeah.
To a select audience, right? I want to make sure it's the right fit. But I'm going to be doing about 3 weeks of a similar program for everyone that's, like, involved at TPA. So it's going to be recorded live, and those recordings are going to be shared. But it's a very basic premise of what I believe can give you the edge in the market. Well, not like, let's say not the edge, but like to have a very defined concrete system that allows you, that gives you the tools to develop an edge and a better understanding of the markets, right? So
yeah.
The general premise of it is I'll be going through here, let me just read this off. Like, I'll be going through auction theory. Like,
nice.
Well, first of all, I'll be going through the tools that I use, right, to help people understand the system that I trade, what it is, like how it's like kind of constructed, and like start the reverse engineering process behind that. Then we'll talk about auction theory, getting like a very good understanding of auction theory. And then I'm going to go through like, I think like two sessions of like the A+ setups that I use. So there's, I think like, I can't remember exactly how many there are like six or seven, like that I've noticed are the highest probability trades that are based on both order flow and auction theory.
So oh, that sounds awesome.
We're going to spend time doing those. It's like kind of like a playbook.
Yeah. What is that starting?
It's starting December 9th. I might've messed up the dates because I believe... No, it wasn't you. Someone else told me that New Year's was on a Wednesday, so I completely messed the dates up. But we're going to start the week of the 9th.
Week of the 9th, okay.
Yeah, right. So long story short, week of the 9th, and then first or second, well, I guess second week of January, it's going to end because the first week of January is nothing.
Yeah. Like, first week of January, take it off.
It's done, yeah. So, like, we'll be talking about, like, execution, risk management, entries, target decisions, right? Because I think a lot of people don't have a very good understanding of that, and I think that's, like, the most important aspect, right? Like, how do you know when I get out? Like, how do you know how to hold, blah, blah, blah. And, like, talking about progression as a trader, journaling, your favorite topic.
Journaling, yes. I finally got a new leather-bound journal that I started using. Oh, it feels so good to write in there.
And then... topic that we had today, right? Trading small accounts versus prop accounts and like getting funded and actually getting paid. Like we'll take a look at like the differences between those and like what's going on there, but that's going to be a big topic towards the end.
I feel like we could probably cover that one with you again, any other time you want to come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure. I know Baba would love to talk to you again.
Yeah, for sure. I haven't seen him in a while. I know he had some like issues in the States, right? Like where he was at.
Yeah. He was in the middle of that giant hurricane that hit North Carolina, South Carolina.
I didn't fully know it was that, but damn, that's crappy.
Dude, no, he was bad. He had his whole entire basement got flooded out. Yeah, they had a tree fall on the roof. His parents' house was like couldn't even get to it. Like all the bridges washed away.
Oh my god. Well,
go back and listen to the one that we did with him after he came back from that. And just, okay, cool. It's really interesting to hear how the community like pulled together. It's really heartwarming, actually.
That's nice. That's good to hear, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, this has been awesome having you back in here. TradeProAcademy.com. That's where you can find, is there a code that they enter for the discounts or is there a link?
There, if you go onto the website, you should probably find it as like a pop-up or a banner, or if you're like in our Discord, it's in there as well.
I'll grab it and make sure it's in the show notes so people can get to it easily.
I'll send you the link.
But yeah, I'll definitely want to check that out. I know Mark D really enjoyed working with you a couple years ago when you first started rolling out those mentorship things that you're doing. He had a lot of really good things to say. So yeah, if you can take advantage of that, I would definitely jump on that. But I think that we should probably call it here so everyone get back to visiting with their families. So please join me in thanking Vico for slumming it with us. Visit Trade Pro Academy to learn how to trade like Vico does. And you can stay up to date with the show by visiting bandoftraderspodcast.com. You can take a look at our huge back catalog by guest. I will be back soon with another exciting episode for you to like, share, and subscribe. But until then, remember to trade like a trade pro and have a wonderful holiday weekend. This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.